This is Oklahoma Perspective. While local municipal governments are overseen by state offices, local Native American tribes are sovereign and immediately answer only to the federal government. As a result, the actions the tribes take in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic are unique to their own situations. KRMG's Russell Mills talks with Chuck Hoskins, principal chief of the Cherokee Nation, about how they're dealing with the pandemic.
How is the Cherokee Nation handling this issue?
Well, we're being very proactive about it. And I think the first thing people should know is that we have the largest tribal health care system in the country, and we have a very robust public health department in our tribal health system. And so we are prepared from a personnel standpoint, expertise, and facilities to handle different sorts of virus and illness outbreaks, even though, you know, thinking ahead, we couldn't have known about this virus. We have the sort of the protocols in place to handle that as a general proposition. And then we take all that expertise and we bring them to bear in terms of an internal team, which we've done starting a few weeks back, monitoring this, getting CDC data, getting all the latest information, and taking steps to protect our citizens. But by doing so, we're really protecting communities in Northeast Oklahoma. So we're really on the front lines of this.
So talk to us about this call center that has been set up. How does that work? How do people participate, and can anybody call, or just members of the of the Cherokee Nation, or how's that go?
Sure. Well, it's designed for our citizens, and of course we have hundreds of thousands of citizens, but if they get calls, we're going to make sure to help people all we can. But what it's primarily designed to do is if people call 833-528-0063, they will get in touch with an actual employee of our health system. And that employee can answer questions. And, in cases where a person indicates that they sort of meet some of those red flags, if you will, of having traveled, having the symptoms, we can direct them to our health clinics, the health clinic nearest them, so that we are really guiding them to the right place rather than have them walk into the ER. We can sort of know ahead of time that somebody that might be symptomatic with COVID-19 type symptoms can be met at the facility. And of course, at all of our facilities, we have sort of an infectious disease protocol and places for them to go in. So that's really what the number is designed to do, is to tell our citizens what to do and how to navigate their health system, and to do it in a way that protects the public.
And is it, lighten up? Are they getting a lot of calls, or are people finding out about it, or?
Yeah, people are really just finding out about it, but I'm told that the calls are starting to increase as we get the word out. And again, this is a great substitute for having people, sort of walk into our emergency room, say in Tahlequah, because that takes a whole lot of resources to deal with. And you can actually do it more effectively if you're talking to somebody and talking about their symptoms. Again, the person on the end of the line is an employee in our health system who's knowledgeable and trained to sort of hear and listen for the symptoms, rather. And then know where to steer these folks, and then answer just questions that people naturally have about their fears and concerns about the virus.
Well, and it just makes sense that if you're trying to prevent the spread of a virus, doing it over the phone would be smarter than going into a medical clinic or whatever and doing it in person if you can do it that way, right?
Yeah, it's really the best way in terms of the front lines to manage the situation that the whole country is really coming to grips with right now. And then, when we do find someone who needs tested, we have the ability to test. So if we steer them into our system and we're very responsibly and safely getting that person where they need to go, then Cherokee Nation, we have the ability to do the tests and get results back. And again, this is all, this is for our citizens, of course, but this is really all part of a public health effort. We're kind of all in it together when it comes to a virus outbreak like this.
Right, because, you're Oklahoma citizens too, and you're moving around the community and eating at restaurants and going to work like the rest of us. So it's not like you're living in some sort of segregated community. One thing I wanted to ask you about, and somebody mentioned this to me the other day, and I don't know if you want to address this or not, but Cherokee Nation runs a lot of businesses, but among them are the casinos. And when you go to a casino, what are you doing? You're touching the screens, right? You're sitting in chairs that other people have sat in. You're hanging around with a lot of folks. I've never been to an empty Cherokee Nation casino. So how are those businesses in particular dealing with this? Because they've got they've got a huge exposure to the public to somehow handle.
Right, and they've been sensitive about that from the get-go. Of course, we have very high standards in terms of cleaning and sanitation at all of our facilities, but we've stepped them up as we've looked at the impact of COVID-19 around the country. So even if people aren't seeing it firsthand in our facilities, we have a lot of people that are stepping up cleaning and sanitation on just a continual basis. And I say even if they're not seeing it, I think you can't help but see it. So there's just this comprehensive effort to keep the facilities clean. And, you know, getting back to the basics, any sort of virus, and I'm not a health expert, but I've talked to plenty on our team, it really still comes down to making sure you're washing your hands, making sure that surfaces that need to be wiped down are wiped down. And so those practices are in place among our workforce at the casinos, both their own responsibility to, you know, to keep their hands clean and all those sorts of things, and to stay home if they're ill, but also cleaning down surfaces. So I'm very confident that we are doing everything we can to minimize exposure in our facilities.
And I can only imagine that, like our employers did, you're sitting down with employees and saying, look, if you, and you mentioned just a moment ago, if you are sick, please stay home and don't bring it in. And here are the parameters for that. And here's what to do and who to contact, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, that's a pretty good idea anytime, but certainly when we're dealing with this this public health issue of COVID-19, I think those are things we need to just continually impress upon the workforce. And we are a large employer. We have approximately 11,000 employees throughout our system. That's both government employees and business employees. But I think we do a good job in that regard. And I've been impressed with how we've responded from a managerial level on to the rank and file.
Now, as a sovereign entity, you guys you do have to deal with the federal government, the state government. In other words, there's an interface there. There's a cooperation that has to exist between these different entities. I'm curious if, you know, with all the trouble the CDC and the FDA has had with testing kits and all that kind of junk, are you satisfied that you're getting the help that you need to deal with this?
Well, yeah, I think we can always use more help. And so here's what I can tell you today, when we'll get these numbers out, but we just got awarded a pretty significant amount of money from the CDC as part of this larger package that people have heard about in the news just within the past week of funding going down to the state and local level, and in our case, sovereign Indian Nation, to address COVID-19, the coronavirus. So we're going to be announcing a pretty significant amount of money coming directly from CDC. So our relationship there is good. We stay in touch with CDC all the time on various health programs that we have anyway. And our Deputy Chief Brian Warner sits on an advisory panel for the CDC. So we are engaged. And then when something like this comes up, yes, you do hear about things in the news, and people may take issue with certain things that have to do with the CDC. But our relationship with them has been good. The response in this has been good. And I would say the same with the state of Oklahoma. In fact, one route we have for testing is to the state of Oklahoma, and we have a good relationship with the health system, or the health department, rather, at the state of Oklahoma.
Are you aware of any citizens of the Cherokee Nation who've been tested or at this point, or is that even public knowledge?
Well, you know, I'm not aware of, it's possible some have been tested. I don't keep my finger on the pulse as closely as the number that have been tested, and it's certainly a sensitive number, but we are prepared to test and have the ability to send the test off to the state or to a private company and have the resources to do it and have all the protocols in place. So as people are coming into our system, if they're displaying the symptoms and a test is warranted, then a test will be given.
All right, I'm going to throw you a curveball real quick. Tomorrow begins the United States 2020 decennial census. Mm-hmm. Huge deal. And I've got to think that for your community as much as any, it's really important that every person get counted and that every, you know, possible resource that's allocated on a federal basis is allocated fairly based on an accurate count of your population. So what are you telling folks about the census?
Well, the deputy chief and I have launched a campaign called the Cherokee Nation Counts, and we're putting it out on social media, and we've got people out in the communities. So for all those reasons you said, it's important that Cherokee citizens be counted. So what we're encouraging our citizens to do is identify themselves, not only identify themselves as Cherokee, but also specifically indicate that the tribe that they're affiliated with is the Cherokee Nation. Those are important steps to take so that we're accurately counted. Two things I'll say about why it's important. For the Cherokee Nation standpoint, we figured out that for every Cherokee citizen that does not participate in the census, it costs Cherokee Nation about $50,000 over the course of a decade. That's a significant amount of money in the aggregate, and so anything we can do to step up participation is good from a financial standpoint, but it's just good for there to be an accurate count of Cherokees, and so that that dollar figure, of course, takes the form of grants and various federal funding formulas. So we're reaching out particularly to some of the rural areas where participation has been low, and trying to step that up. But the second thing I'll say is this is one more example where our effort is really inuring to the benefit of the entire state, because it's important for Oklahoma and Oklahomans to be counted. And so as we're putting in these resources, and I mean we're putting real dollars behind this effort, real boots on the ground type effort, it really helps the whole state because it means more Oklahomans get counted. So we're really all in it together on the census.
We really are, and it's also important just from a perspective of congressional representation. I mean, there's just so many huge things that all come down to how many people you can prove live in your state.
Absolutely.
Anything else that you want to add?
You mentioned the rebranding, and there was some yes. media about that. Just to be clear, we have a component of our Cherokee Nation businesses that deals in federal contracting. That's been rebranded Cherokee Nation Federal. So I know that gets to be a bit in the weeds, but you'll still be hearing references to Cherokee Nation businesses as the overall company. That's just a business unit that deals a lot in federal contracting. So that's the reason that has changed.
Principal Chief of the Cherokee Nation, Chuck Hoskins. You're listening to Oklahoma Perspective. Along with hospitals and nursing homes, local jails have a high concentration of people in a small area, making it difficult in many cases to practice social distancing. KRMG's Russell Mills talks with Casey Roebuck with the Tulsa County Sheriff's Office about how they're dealing with this challenge at the Tulsa County Jail.
I called you because I had a call from an inmate saying that, you know, people were being quarantined next to healthy people. And I mean, there were a lot of claims about, you know, sanitation at the jail and this and that. I can only imagine if she's calling me, she might be calling other folks. And what I told her was, well, I will call the sheriff's office and ask the question. And Casey, you were foolish enough to take my call. So so what's the answer? I mean, what are they doing at the jail? Because I think Sheriff Regalado said the other day, it's like a giant, you know, without being too flippant about it, it's almost like a cruise ship on land. Everybody's locked in, literally.
That's right. The jail is, you know, by nature an area where people are going to be in close quarters. And we know that the risk of someone coming in with an exposure could make things, you know, explode very quickly. So we have erred on the side of caution. The entire jail is being sanitized with medical grade cleaner every single night. We took everyone's temperatures last night just to see if somebody had a fever in the population. They do not. Therefore, there are no quarantines necessary in the jail, so there's no truth to that claim whatsoever. We're going to continue to monitor employees. We check them for fever when they come in, just as a precaution. We haven't had to send anybody home yet doing our checks, but if they do, they'll have to go home for 14 days. They can't come back without a doctor's note. We also have changed our booking procedures. There's always a nurse that meets with the inmates as they're booked in and asks them questions about their health and mental health. Now we've added a few questions to that questionnaire about whether or not they may have been exposed to COVID-19, just as a precaution. And if there has, then we can take, you know, steps accordingly. We do have the ability at the jail to quarantine someone who we think has been infected, but thus far we have not had to do that. But we're doing everything we can to protect the health of the inmates, the health of our employees, and the health of the public at large. That is why visitation has been suspended until further notice. So, you know, visitors, we're asking them to use video visitation. That goes for attorneys, families, everybody, to reduce the number of people coming into the jail overall. So at this point, you know, the The plans change daily according to need. For instance, today, the lobby here at our headquarters building is only open to people who have very important business, such as medical workers who need to get fingerprinted for their background checks and sex offenders that need to register. But beyond that, the lobby here at our headquarters building is no longer open to the general public. So we're taking every step that we can to try and do our part to prevent the spread of this virus.
That's a lot to unpack there. But for the general public, doesn't know the sheriff's office does more than just round up the bad guys and throw them in jail. And you mentioned the fingerprinting process, and there's a lot of forms and stuff that you guys would generally process there in your office that right now you really can't because you can't have foot traffic in and out.
That's right. We want to reduce the number of people coming to our lobby, for the safety of our employees. So, generally we will do fingerprints for adoptions, gun permits, all of these things. We do a lot in our public services unit, and that brings a lot of people into our lobby. So just out of an abundance of caution, we want to reduce that number and only do very essential services that are important to keeping people safe, such as the sex offender registry. And we want to be able to get our healthcare workers everything that they need to do their jobs. So we have the public services, we have the jail, we have patrol. We also run security at the courthouse. And of course, now access to the courthouse has been reduced as well for the time being until further notice. So concerns about the spread of COVID-19 have affected every single operation of this office. We want to do whatever we can to help prevent the spread and protect the health of our employees as well, because, for instance, a patrol deputy responds to numerous calls on a daily basis. We can't work from home. We don't have that option, which is why we're asking for anybody who needs our services, if they believe that there's been an exposure to them or someone in their household, or if they're in quarantine currently for COVID-19, we're asking them to tell our dispatchers so that they can relay this information to not only our deputies, but all the first responders who may come in contact with that person, just so they can take some added precautions to protect the first responders and try and prevent the spread of all the various people that those first responders are going to come into contact with after we help the 911 caller.
And deputies, I can only imagine. And by the way, folks, I just want to stress what Casey's saying here. We got to protect these men and women because they're the ones who protect us, right? So we want to take those precautions. Absolutely. That's to all of our benefit. And I would imagine that there has been, extra precautions taken in the field, just like what we're doing here at the radio station. I wear rubber gloves when I'm when I'm sitting in a room touching a board that other people touch. We're all doing it by mandate. And I would imagine that deputies are taking those same kind of precautions in the field as much as possible, right?
They absolutely are. They have gloves available to them. We have a limited, at this point, supply of masks, but they are available. If, for instance, the dispatcher says, hey, the caller at this location confirms that there is a quarantine at this address, then they're going to go ahead and take even more precautions. But in addition to that, everybody's just trying to practice good hygiene, frequent hand washing. Everybody has, Clorox wipes and hand sanitizer at their disposal. We're all doing whatever we can because, as we mentioned, we can't work from home. So we're doing the best that we can, and we'll all get through this together.
And can't just sit in the car either. I mean, they've got to go to homes, and they've got to deal with people at bad times in their lives sometimes. So, I just have to ask you, Casey, how are you doing? How are folks doing there? What's the mood like? I mean, because for me personally, it's all very surreal at this point.
Yeah, I know that we've never seen anything like this before. I don't think anybody has. But everyone's keeping a stiff upper lip. Doing our part just to try and get through it. We do have a lot of staff members that are staying home with their kids right now and burning comp time. So it's a lower staff level around here, but we're still able to perform all the operations that we need to serve the public. So we're just in it just like you guys are, just doing the best that we can.
Casey Roebuck with the Tulsa County Sheriff's Office. Special thanks to KRMG's Russell Mills for the interviews. This is Oklahoma Perspective for Cox Media Group. I'm Bert Williams.